The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Hi, everyone. Well, we're getting so close to Christmas and all the emotions, and sometimes it's really great. And there are a few people that experience, you know, pain and suffering from loss. But how many times have you heard somebody say, "Oh, I feel your pain. I know what you're going through." You know, do you find that you have the ability to understand and share feelings of others? We've all experienced, like, I just came back from a fabulous wedding. The love and the emotion was so contagious. But then on the flip side, we've also, seen on the flip side that emotional contagion can also be destructive, such as in the case of Ferguson. So we really want to delve more into the capacity and what causes people to have these symbiotic binding relationship. So I'm so pleased and honored to have this special guest that has a broadest range of knowing about empathy, not just in individual context, but he even goes back into historically. So my guest I'm welcoming is Lou Augusta, Dr. Augusta, PhD, where he specializes in a gracious and generous listening based on empathy. He's an educator. He teaches empathy in the history and systems of psychology program in the Illinois School of Professional Psychology at Augustine University. He's also in private practice as a psychotherapist in Chicago. He has broad ranges in training from domestic violence, partner abuse, and a whole program that's set up in his department. So I'm not going to keep going on and on. I want you to hear, and I want you to feel, and I'm sure he'll let you know by the end of the show what you need to do to communicate. Thank you so much, Dr. Augusta. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Suzanne, for such a wonderful introduction. I am delighted to be here. I'm excited. I'm actually even overstimulated. And delighted. We're going to have a great conversation. The topic is empathy. I'm passionate and enthusiastic about it. I want to say up front, you know, yes, I've done a lot of work. I've taken ground. The guy who is has published on empathy is arguably an expert in empathy, struggles every day to take ground in empathy, my ultimate inauthenticity. I want to call it up front. I've got a lot to learn about empathy. And I want to say to every parent, every educator, every healthcare professional, every teacher, every first responder, every human being, right? You don't actually need a professional to tell you what empathy is. Everybody knows empathy, uses it every day, whether they appreciate it or not. Sometimes the experts, for want of a better word, the experts can make a contribution in calling out some of the distinctions, in calling our attention to some of the things we really already know, we already live. But, you know, we're on automatic pilot. We're getting through the day. We're pushed down into survival mode by one thing or another. And we need to take our game up a level or two, which is why it's valuable to have these kinds of conversations.
And it goes back to really flight or fight, back, you know, to our reptilian brain, that you have to have some kind of skill, even, you know, the cavemen back there in the jungles today.
Yeah.
And how do people begin to develop empathy? And is it, you know, is it...
I think if, as you suggested, we were talking briefly offline before the show, and as I think you usefully suggested, we might define our terms up front, right? Let's get on the table a working definition of empathy. It's not like this is the absolute truth, and if you don't agree with this, this is going to be state my assumptions or presuppositions as I understand. What is empathy? A short definition of empathy is that I know what you're feeling because I feel it too, not as a merger, but as a vicarious experience, key term vicarious experience, such as one might have in the movies or the theater or reading a novel where one partially identifies with the hero, but still knows that I'm who I am as a person and the other person is still who they are as a person dealing with what they're dealing with, right? So, yes, I put myself in the shoes of the other person. I think the ordinary wisdom of everyday speech, walk in my moccasins, I walk in your moccasins for a mile or two, and I get to see where they pinch because I take on also not just your moccasins, but who you are as a person. What I know about you, and that makes a big difference too. If I don't know you very well, that raises the bar on my empathy. I know you're a human being. I know you had two parents at one point. You may or may not know them, but you see what I mean?
Right.
And so there's a lot of work done in empathy around boundary issues. Boundary. But empathy is crossing a boundary between myself and you while respecting that boundary when it works right. And when it works less well or less right, then it is useful and helpful in expanding one's empathy to look at the boundary and how that plays in the game you had. So that's a complete thought right there. I am also, you know, you going to pick up on what you said about emotional contagion. You're at a wedding. It's a wonderful, loving event of great affection and affinity, and you know, and people are having a good time, and that's great. You know, if you're not having a good time, that's a problem, right?
Right.
And there is, and so, you know, the emotional contagion. Let me just, if I may, platform off on that a little bit, because the kind of emotional contagion and of happiness, and that's the good kind, right? And enthusiasm and well wishing and you know, drink responsibly and all of that, and dance on the table responsibly. I want responsible dancing. I mean, if not there, where else, right? The point is that that's not yet empathy, but it's in, I believe, this is, you know, the discussion, it's input to the empathic process. As human beings, and maybe even if you brought along your pet dog or cat, or, you know, a higher mammal, they would be excited and stimulated as well by that. They wouldn't understand the words, they wouldn't understand the human commitment, but they would get the emotional contagion. So we share that. And that's an interesting thing. I think it needs to be better understood in the conversation and the discussion about empathy, that there, you know, it's not yet empathy, but we further process that kind of contagion, process it, I would say, by means of understanding, by means of cognition, by means of saying what's possible for, in this case, the newlyweds who are beginning a life. There's a lot of possibility there, right? And, you know, it could go in a lot of different directions with that.
I'm sorry, Lou. Okay,
we talked. I paused for breath.
Oh, that's okay. I'm gonna give you a break. We talk a lot about, you know, emotionality, but I heard about Charles Darwin. He argued that emotional experience should be profoundly affected by feedback from the facial muscles. So even though we, you know, like at the wedding group, but it's contagion by physicality also. It's not just limited to. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
Well, let me comment. May I comment on that? I'll use that as a kind of provocative or leading thread. Charles Darwin, the inventor, in effect, one of the inventors of the theory of evolution, 1859, The Origin of Species, he brings a specific approach to evolution, an idea which had been around forever, essentially, in different forms, but he was an astonishing, a genius of astonishing scope and an innovator scientifically in the idea of variation and natural selection. And you referred there to his 1871 book, The Expression of Emotions in Man and Animals, where basically, in that day, his research method was to send out a survey to his colleagues in Indonesia and, you know, South America and the USA and Europe and to scientists that he knew, and to get feedback on whether, in what sense, and how animals like dogs and cats and chimpanzees and orangutans and monkeys and, you know, and elephants.
Right.
I don't think he did much work on elephants, although they're very interesting and very intelligent and very interesting creatures. Experience emotions on a continuum. And he laid out, some basic ideas. Yes, we share emotions with the higher animals. Anybody's owned a dog or a cat knows that very well, that they experience excitement and high spirits and low spirits and a kind of fear and a kind of, I don't know if the best word is happiness, but it's definitely high spirits. They're happy to see you. You know, it's dinner time. Well, okay, that's a reason.
And my animals, you know, they have this, I guess, can we use the word empathy when they see that I'm, you know, down a little bit or...
They
pick up on that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, another colleague, Franz Duval, the director of the Primate Research Lab at Emory University, would indeed use the word empathy. I mean, his book, I'll give a shout-out, his book, The Age of Empathy, a couple of years back, hits the front page of the Wall Street Journal, puts it on the map, right? You can't buy publicity like that. So they do experience. I mean, and it's debatable. There's a debate that's going to go round and round and back and forth, but that's fine. Human beings add something to it when we bring language to it. But you referred to the facial expression.
Oh, wait, Lou,
right?
Can I stop you right here? We're going to go to a short break.
Sure.
And I'd love to come back and we start talking about Paul Ekman and Michael expressions. So we'll be right back with Lou Augusta. Thank you.
Ever notice that sometimes life just feels easier?
It's your world.
Especially
motivate,
when judgment
change,
of you or
succeed.
Anyone else ceases
Voice
to
America
exist?
Empower.
What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, I'm back with Dr. Lou Augusta, and he's right on top of empathy. He has written several books, A Room of Empathy, Resistance, Narrative, and Recovery. But what we were talking about right after break is micro-expressions. And I'm not sure if a lot of people realize exactly what it is and the benefits of knowing it. So we're back with Dr. Augusta. Yeah. Hey, Lou.
Hey, Suzanne. Thanks so much. And
oh, no.
Right, micro-expressions. Define your terms, Augusta, here. What the heck are we talking about? So let me try to create the context for the conversation very succinctly. We have mentioned Darwin's work on emotions in animals, and a man named Paul Ekman, E-K-M-A-N, definitely worth, he's got a couple of great YouTube videos, trained as a psychologist, sets out to prove Darwin wrong and fails in a scientifically interesting way. Darwin has legs, that is to say, his research has legs. And he ends up, the title of Ekman's book says it all. Telling Lies, Clues to Deceit in the Marketplace, Politics, and Marriage. The relevant, 1992, so it's been around a while. Check out your favorite online bookseller. The relevance to empathy, now, is my theory, not Ekman's. He develops the idea, give you an example, that there are literally dozens, if not hundreds, of facial muscles over which we have limited control. I can fake a smile by baring my teeth, but there are muscles around my eyes which are activated in an authentic smile that are not activated when I am faking it.
Is that the the ocular obiscus, something like that?
There are fancy Latin and Greek names for these, yes. And I'm not sure I want to go there. That's the one.
I think it's important to say about Duchenne's smile, how they took the dead person and they gave him electrical impulses to prove that.
Well, that's right. I mean, now, Ekman really does not comment. He's an astonishing innovator and researcher, and I honor and acknowledge his work in so many ways. I've learned so much. I mean, it's some of it is hilarious, right? But you can see how he will have heard from large and powerful law enforcement organizations as well, because the would-be suicide bomber expresses her or his contempt for the running dogs of capitalism or the bad system, whoever wants to blow up and somebody's got a grievance against something at all times. So, you know, we live a sheltered life because of the great work being done by the law enforcement, right?
Exactly.
Nevertheless, there's a micro expression which expresses his contempt that, in spite of the smile, is hard, perhaps not impossible to hide. And so, you know, there's a law enforcement application which has resulted in, I don't know, I would say research funding and interest, but that's not the main reason I'm interested in it, you know? That's how it hit the front page of the Wall Street Journal, right? I'm interested in it because of empathy, because of application, and I think as you are interested in it as well, applications from literally from the boardroom to the bedroom, and the family and friendships and all forms of relatedness all along the way. I mean, this thing has legs. If you are aware of micro expressions that I am not aware of, then your empathic responsiveness is arguably deeper or more sensitive or more accurate or in a way better, you might say, than mine. Your receptivity is more accurate or potentially accurate if you can train yourself to be present to what is really going on there, because we are naturally affected by these facial expressions. I mean, we just grow up relating to faces. Infants naturally respond to whatever face is available. There's something in the, you know, the boy or the baby, the neonate, the newborn, that just naturally responds to a human face. So we're, you know, in effect training in that, whether we know it or not, from the get-go. So long story short, you know, calling attention to this and focusing on this and working with this and understanding it and, in effect, being with it, for want of a better term, causes empathy to expand and develop.
Well, Lou, don't you think there is a big problem right now for the younger generation that that they're behind the computer screen? They, you know, the text messages does not have any inflection.
Interesting. You know, virtual, this is called virtuality. My virtual life, right? And
yes.
I'm relating to somebody on Facebook. There is really no substitute for being in physically present in the same physical space. Next best, maybe being on the phone. That's pretty good. A real human being, a real voice,
right,
in real time.
Yeah.
I think there's hope. This is not dump on the younger generation day, although, you know, because they'll be dumping right back. They're the future. The thing about Facebook, I mean, let me say this. I was social, as a teenager, I was socially awkward before Facebook had ever been invented.
Okay. It just seems like there's a real disconnect that they don't know how to, they socially not as adept as like when they go to a job interview. Do you have any recommendations for those type
I'm not sure I agree. I mean, I respect the point of view, and I also, you know, given the opportunity to mix it up, I think it's good. Recommendations, you know, the recommendation is to schedule a cup of coffee or, you know, other beverage of choice and be present with another person live and in person. There's no substitute for that. That's the recommendation. But what I wanted to say is that, you know, I'm not giving up on the empathy of social networking and social media. I think that while it is not as expansive as an empathic connectivity of being present with the person, there's some empathy there. Why? Because empathy itself is a vicarious virtual experience of the other's experience. Remember up top I gave this definition? I know what you're experiencing not as a merger, but as a vicarious experience, like in the movies, or in the theater, or on social media. Now, that's not a complete substitute for being present in the space. So I see there being, you know, an empathic dimension to social media. I think that, like computers, it can be very limiting, right? But it is an avenue and an access that was not previously available, whatever, 10 years ago. I mean, nobody saw social networking coming. I don't care. Left wing, right wing,
right,
in between. This
right
is very innovative and very discontinuous, setting fear into the hearts of tyrants everywhere. I mean,
well,
right? I mean, there are not enough people.
Absolutely.
To
well, you know, one good thing is, and I'm just going to throw it out there for people that that feel like they need to, you know, improve their skills, that Paul Ekman does have online program there. It teaches you to recognize a micro expression in like 1/25th of a second. So yeah, that you're able to gain. And it's amazing because that little smirk that goes up on the side of your mouth that maybe nobody else knows that one of the politicians gave the other. I mean, it's a great program. So I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I just wanted to throw it out there.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, you cannot miss following up on the work of Paul Ekman. I do some empathy. I mean, I can give a shout out for myself as well. I do empathy training and coaching and consulting in addition to my commitment to a gracious and generous listening in a context of psychotherapy, where I work with people with, I would say, in some ways, more significant and serious struggles and issues and suffering. But yes, I mean, look for, in terms of, I'm just going to go to it, we're having a wide-ranging conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ekman's been around forever, so empathy training is not new news. I mean, one could always get access to it. It's easy to predict, this is an easy, low-hanging prediction, that we will be seeing more of it. The need is great. And it is especially significant. And if you take empathy up a level, may I share with you some work I did with one of my classes at school, which I think is relevant to the training. I mean, this is a class in the history and systems of psychology, and as a class project, I asked the people in the class, the students in the class, to interview five people, not members of their family, five people they didn't know or didn't know very well at the job. The person thought was empathy. And just don't tell them. Don't tell them what it is. You know, just, and bring back and report to the class on that. We made a movie. We made a short educational video of, you know, kind of low-text, bottom-up sound bites, but I did some nice editing on it. And you know, it's out on the website, arumorofempathy.com, a rumor of empathy. A rumor being an unsubstantiated report. We're going in search of empathy, and we're seeing if it pans out and plays out. And, you know, in that way expand. And basically people think, the result of the research, people think empathy is compassion. And there's nothing wrong with that. The heavens knows the world needs more compassion. The world needs more altruism. The world needs more graciousness. And strictly speaking, it's not empathy. Empathy tells me what the other person is experiencing. My, if you will, ethics, my sense of right and wrong, my sense of altruism and compassion tells me what to do about it, right?
And that's so important, because a lot of people think, when we go back to I feel your pain, there's a big difference between sympathy, feeling bad for somebody, or actually, like you said, incorporating feeling the real connection, that symbiotic, almost like that. But Lou, we're getting ready to go to a break, and we come back. There's so much to talk about, but you've written some great ideas for the 2015 predictions on empathy.
Yes.
So I'd love for the guests to hear, even if we can touch on some. So we'll be back with Dr. Lou Augusta and some more empathy. So by the time we discontinue this conversation, you'll feel everything we're feeling right now. We're having a good time. Thanks, Lou.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you feel like sometimes you just don't know where to start with your health and fitness routine? Every week, you can hear from people who have been where you feel that you are right now and find out how they moved forward and are living their best lives ever. It's called Lifestyle 360, and your host is Nicole Monier. Get inspired to take control of your health and your life. Tune into Lifestyle 360 every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you ready to move to your next level? Listen for Empowering Women, Transforming Lives with host Rebecca Hall-Greider. Each show will focus on a central topic with discussion, guests, and your questions being featured. Our show is perfect for women who feel a call in their heart to step out in a bigger, more powerful way in their life and just need some encouragement, inspiration, and practical steps to support them on their journey. Empowering Women, Transforming Lives can be heard live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Empowerment.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, I'm back with Dr. Lou Augusta, and he's going to take us through his predictions for 2015 about empathy. Some of them are going to knock your socks off because, I mean, I literally was like, wow. In context of business, from the boardroom to the bedroom, he'll cover that for us. So welcome back, Dr. Augusta.
Thank you, Suzanne. It's great to be back. And, you know, I want to ask you to think about something as we go through this. The challenge is always and often and maybe always to make empathy present in the conversation, right? Whether things are going well or not well. I'm putting that in the back of my mind. I invite you and the listeners to put that in the back of their mind. And as you say, I had a brainstorm literally the day before yesterday. Everybody's issuing predictions for the new year. Why don't I try to say something sensible and meaningful about predictions and trends which apply, use, relate to empathy for the new year? If not now, when? So that's what I'm going to call out. I'm going to call some out. I'm going to be provocative. And maybe even confrontational. And so I want to issue up front all the necessary disclaimers, right? The following is not the truth, like a capital T. It is the good faith attempt of Lou Augusta to say something interesting and useful about how empathy applies on the front page, right? In the larger world, I mean, we're on the internet. This goes to everybody on the planet that has an internet connection, right? And a lot of people want an internet connection and can't get them because of the government and the community they're living in and with. And here, we are so privileged and blessed. We get to run on. We get to shoot off our minds and have a good time doing it. So I'm going to enjoy the moment, and I want to begin these predictions with a rumor of empathy at Sony, and a rumor of empathy for Sony. In this case, my empathy tells me that what they were experiencing and what corporate America was experiencing when the mega hack hit was fear. Fear, big time. Fear for making the payroll. Fear for the future of the business, right? I mean, frankly, one doesn't need a lot of empathy to get this, but make sure we do. Fear with a capital T. And they may initially also have experienced disappointment, the initial lack of backbone on the part of the network of distributors. But who knows? Everybody's head is spinning, right? I mean, how to presence empathy at the moment when, heavens knows, where's my hard drive? Where's my computer? Where's my network? And all of this other, you know. So, speaking personally, Speaking personally, now here's the net. I didn't even know I wanted to see the movie, the interview, the interview, right? Until somebody told me that I could not do so.
Uh-huh.
I don't even go in for that sort of humor, you know?
Right.
Being who I am, kind of nerdy and socially awkward, and I've gotten better with that. But I definitely want to see this flick. And here is my prediction. Get ready. The good news. Within 12 months, The Interview will be the most viewed movie on the planet. You heard it here. You can't stop it. You can't. I mean, now, here's the less good news. Sony's not necessarily going to make any money off of it, but maybe they can cut their losses. So,
but Lou, do you think that as you know, society as a culture, the United States, do you think we have empathy for a company that makes you know all these billions of dollars, and then this happens to them? And do you really think, or is like you said that people are upset because now something was taken away from us?
Well, that good. I think that's a good and a powerful and an important question to ask, right? I mean, there is an initial moment. I think I'm going to just, you know, fess up. There's an initial and at least an initial moment when one is happy to see arrogance get its comeuppance. But having said that, there's the bigger picture, you know. I don't even want to, I mean, there's a lot of damage, you know, there's a lot of damage to a lot of people, and it goes down to the community level, too. I now want to see the movie. I've been damaged. We're all Sony now. I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
I mean, good, you know, I think the media, let's dump on the media. They're big and bad and got a lot of money. The media missed the story. It was not about a Hollywood movie star being arrogant. We don't need a major hack to tell us that Hollywood movie stars and all kind, you know, can be arrogant, right? It was about how easily threatened and vulnerable this foreign power, I'm going to say the words, North Korea, really are, such that a silly, dumb movie, this is humor. This is supposed to be a comedy now. You know, as a movie critic, I don't like dumb humor, but even though I now support the movie and want to see the movie, I mean, I would have never seen this movie until, unless it happened. It's good. And so you get the point. You get the two. Here's the empathy lesson here is that humor and empathy, humor and empathy are closely related. Both represent boundary issues. In empathy, I go across a boundary while respecting the boundary. In the case of humor, I'm a little less respectful. I'm going to tell you a joke now as an example.
Okay.
I'm going to do it. I mean,
all right, you know, come on, Emmy.
How is Christmas holiday like a day at the office?
How is it Christmas holiday?
Give up?
Yeah.
In both cases, you get to do all the work. And the big guy in the suit gets all the credit. Ta-da!
How true,
okay. Ta-da. Okay, but now let's take a look at it. Let's analyze it for just a moment. What is funny about that? It's a boundary violation. I get to make fun of the boss. So I get to insult the boss without insulting the boss. And in this case, there's also... You know, in this case, the boss is also imaged as Santa Claus, the big guy in the suit. And he's kind of a funny imaginary character, so there's a secondary laugh there, too. So, you know, this foreign power is so deeply threatened by this humor, right? I mean, it wasn't funny. I mean, the boss can't take a joke, right? I mean, and that, they're about to launch a nuclear weapon. Now, so that's serious, right? I mean, they're insane. It's insanity. The fear there is so great that, you know, we're not going to do it. The USA is not going to do this. And it is going to be the most watched movie on the planet. It's not going to be caused by the CIA. Some guy in Singapore has got the tape. So I don't know. Some guy in Bangalore, some guy in, Riyadh, some guy in Cairo. I mean, you know, the list of some guy in Berlin. Those guys are mischief makers. Some guy in Paris or London, or maybe even Chicago or Texas, but it's going to go out there, and then there's no stopping.
Lou, I have a question, and it might be a little bit, you know, off what we're talking about, but it's been bothering me. I have to, you know, with criminal justice, most sociopaths, the biggest issue is they do not have capacity for being empathetic. So does this go back to like having a depletion of mirror neurons or some other aspect like in psychotherapy when they were younger? Was it never formulated, developed? Is it genetically passed down, mirror neurons?
Well, now you introduced the matter of genetics. I want to put that one on hold.
Okay.
I was going to, I mean, there is such a thing. I mean, I've got a big fat book here, Harvard Business Review, Harvard University Press, not the Business Review, but HBR, H-U-P, Diseases of Empathy. And there is research that suggests that there is something like a capacity or a competence. Some people would call it a module. It might or might not be modular. But that empathy is at the basis of our ability, our human mammalian ability to experience the emotions of other people. That if I lacked this capacity, or if this capacity were functioning at only 40%, I don't know how one would quantify it, but that one would be, yes, one would have sociopathic traits in the sense of define our terms here as usual. The devil is in the detail, but that is somebody who, number one, lacks a conscience, seems to lack a sense of right and wrong that would fit the standard profile of people in the community, that you don't hurt people, you're allowed self-defense, but you don't necessarily enjoy the pain of others. And so there are a small set of diseases of empathy, and this is, once again, the subject of a lot of research and debate in the scientific and research circles, whether it has legs, so to speak, whether there are alternative. The existence of mirror neurons, which you called out, are hypothesized, keyword hypothesis, not proven, to be the basis of the fact that human beings and indeed higher mammals, we all resonate emotionally. That I know what you're feeling because I feel it too. Where does this come from? Well, as we were discussing earlier before the show, Vittorio Gallesi and his colleague Rizzoletti at the University of Parma in the mid-1990s discovered something that they called mirror neurons in laboratory animals, in higher animals. So when the one monkey watched the other monkey drinking from a cup, the same neurons went off in both the observer and the actor. Now, we cannot instrument human beings in that way. However, there is this thing called the functional magnetic resonance imaging machine, the fMRI, which allows us to look at blood oxygenation levels and what areas of the brain, and it has been further hypothesized, and a lot of debate about this, that we can actually witness one person experiencing the pain of another. The short answer is yes, but the prediction for the new year, remember we're in prediction mode here, and here's the prediction: mirror neurons are dead, long live mirror neurons. So what the heck does that mean?
Right.
Basically, research shows that, let me try to say a complete sentence. Some of this research has been debunked in skeptical publications such as Voodoo Correlations in MRI Research with Edward Wuhl, V-U-L, and The Myth of Mirror Neurons by a man named Greg Hickok, that such that some of this research has maybe not been statistically as accurate and on target as it should be. But
okay, Dr. Liu, we're getting ready to go to break, and I can't wait for you to finish it. So we'll be right back with Dr. Liu Augusta. Thanks.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
Like so many others, do you put on a game face to the world? The stress of home life, work life, and personal life converge on us on practically a daily basis. Yet, so rarely do we let others see our real selves. And we carry on like we don't have a single problem. We need to connect and to find out we're not alone. Tune into Stories from the Heart of Leadership with host Shamin Sadek to find out not only what's been created, but the story behind it. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Master your reality and manifest your desires effortlessly. Listen to The Trivedi Effect to find out how raising your level of consciousness can totally transform every aspect of your life. Hosted by Mahendra Kumar Trivedi. With Trivedi Master Alice Branton, our program will spotlight the nearly 4,000 documented scientific studies that have proven the transformational impact of this energy extends beyond humans to all living and even non-living matter. Tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel or Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Dr. Liu Augusta. And all throughout the show, he's been letting me feel his inner desire that to express and help people to reach deep down inside. It's a really intense topic. I wish we had a lot of time. But we're going back to his predictions for 2015. Welcome back, Liu.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Right.
We created a cliffhanger.
Okay.
And we went to break.
Which one really stands out to you the most?
Well, I wanna finish what I was in the middle of saying about mirror neurons, just in the sense that even though there has been significant scientific debunking of whether mirror neurons are operating exactly the way Rizzoli and Galassi imagined, nevertheless, the research area is still valid in that we as human beings are biologically, organically, physiologically connected through action at a distance. In other words, we resonate together. We experience one another's experiences, not as a merger, but as a vicarious experience. And that is not exactly a prediction for the new year, but it bodes well if we can be open to that, empathically receptive to that dimension of our experience. It is greatly informative. And it enables us to expand the community and to deal with the issues that we have to deal with. So I think we've actually touched, you know, I'm kind of doing the issues in the most important version. Look for, so another one. Are you ready for another one?
Oh, yes, sir.
In the new year, people will have a new appreciation that the unexamined life is not worth living. As a philosopher and arguably the first psychotherapist, Socrates famously said, in Plato's Apology that the unexamined life is not worth living. So examining one's life from this perspective of meaningful satisfaction, contribution to the community, will become, and that means being in touch with one's empathy for others and for oneself, will become a priority. I mean, this is like taking two data points and drawing a line between them. Under the provocative dimension of this prediction, a professor at, I want to say, City University in New York, Lou Marinoff, published a book, Plato, Not Prozac. And that becomes Plato, Not Prozac. That becomes a rallying cry in the new year. The pendulum swings back between examining the unexamined life using empathy and dulling one's senses with psychotropic and related substances. Now, I want to say, you know, if God forbid, if a person is considering harming himself or somebody else, definitely take your medicine. Other than that, look carefully at what you're getting into. It can be a deal with the devil. I am a PhD, that's a pile higher and deeper, not a medical doctor, not a psychiatrist. Nevertheless, I expected to get a lot more pushback on this trend from my medical colleagues and associates connections, but they're saying, Lou, you're onto something here. The pendulum has swung too far. And so watch for this to be a part of the rumor of empathy, in mental health. Dynamic psychotherapy and even psychoanalysis are resurgent. They will enjoy renewed flourishing, but unless therapists seize the opportunity, speak up, and engage with the community in a way that addresses the emotional suffering, violent behavior, wounded warriors, the needs of the disempowered, it'll only be an uptick in an otherwise slow, long-term downward trend. Well, so seize the time.
Do you think, I read in your about the trend going where they titrating less of the psychotropic drugs, is that what you see on the horizon?
Well, interesting. Thank you. I mean, short story here. Psychiatrists that I've spoken with are discovering, you know, people have to make a living. What's the revenue model, right? I mean, I got to feed my family. Medical doctors of all kinds have to. We got to eat, right? I mean, they're discovering.
Sure.
And, two things. Number one, one can make, a psychiatrist can make almost as much money, if not more, taking people off of drugs as putting them on. There are people who sensibly or wisely decide they want to get off whatever medications they have ethically and been put on at some point in their life, and they decide it's time to lose that, you know, kind of short-term fix. And so psychiatrists are discovering that they can satisfy the perfectly ethical, legal, proper revenue model by helping people to get off of medications that no longer are benefiting them and are causing them to put on weight, bad forms of fat, interfering with their sex lives. I mean, you look at the list of side effects, it is frighteningly long, right?
Absolutely.
So I call that the Occupy Psychiatry Movement. I want to give a shout-out for that term to the friends at Psychology Tomorrow. Not Psychology Today, but Psychology Tomorrow. I saw that blog post, Occupy Psychiatry. I'm Googling that one. These are all significant and things with which the community is struggling.
Dr. Liu, can somebody be overly empathic?
Can somebody be overly empathic? This is what I would say. If the house is on fire, grab the kids and get out. Don't spend any time being empathic. On the other hand, here's the lesson here. I'm going to net this out.
Let me give you a real brief heads up. We have 2 minutes to close, and I want everybody to be able to know your projects, your schedule, and everything. So,
okay, well, thank you for that. I'll take that advice. Maybe I will send people to my website
Okay.
The answer to that question as an assignment. I'm so bad.
Sounds good.
Check. I mean, you can actually read the predictions for 2015. If you Google my research site or put it in straight up, www.arumorofempathy.com. One word, a rumor of empathy.
Okay.
Rumor as in unsubstantiated report, empathy as in human understanding. So you'll hit the predictions for 2015. Thank you for the chance to promote the Chicago Empathy Project. Basically, that's my way of engaging with the community. I offer low-fee consulting services to community organizations that see value in expanding their empathy, in engaging with constituents. If they've got budget, so much the better. I work with government organizations and corporations. I've made a series of educational videos under the title, and I would say it's getting to be a bit of a brand, a rumor of empathy. We did a class project at school. I think I mentioned that. I interviewed the president of Argosy University. Anyway, and expanding empathy in the community. There's enough empathy to go around. I'm not making more empathy. There's enough empathy to go around. What I'm trying to do is expand the empathy in the sense that use the empathy we have to make a difference. And
I think that's perfect.
The short version. More than that, LouAugusta.com, one word.
Okay, great. And it was sheer pleasure having you on my show. And I want everybody to go check him out. It's season. It doesn't have to be holidays. You have to put empathy every day in your life. And thank you again, Dr. Augusta. It was a pleasure.
A real pleasure.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.